Hi guys, we recorded several episodes before coronavirus hit, and the content was fantastic, but it was not particularly relevant during the coronavirus pandemic. And while we thought this coronavirus was going to last for maybe a shorter period of time originally than we do now, we feel like we shouldn't wait any longer to get this great content out there. So you're going to see these episodes popping up over the next few weeks, and it's great content. I hope you enjoy it.
If you have an idea that you think you could probably tackle, then just go for it. And then if your board or your director is on board with it, or even if they're not, give them the reasons why you think it'll be successful and why you think you should tackle it, and go for it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. I'm excited to be with you today. We've got a great guest for you. His name is Matt Hawkins, and he is the Director of Sports and Market Development for the Bloomington Normal Area Convention and Visitors Bureau. Matt, welcome to the show.
Great. Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, we're excited to have you. And you know, we're all kind of navigating and trying to figure out what our new normal is. And I know you've got a lot going on, so I appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. I'm excited to talk to you. As we've said before the show, I've listened to several of the episodes, and you guys got some great content on here. So hopefully I can add a little bit to that that lineup.
Well, hey, now you're on both sides of the equation, a listener and a guest. So yeah, we're excited to do this today. Thanks for listening.
Absolutely.
Well, you know the drill then, if you're a listener. You know, we start out with, it's a travel podcast. So tell us a little bit about your dream destination. If you could go anywhere in the world, Matt, where would it be?
Well, I'm going to, since we're in a new normal here, I might break the rules on this just a tad. That's okay with you?
That's okay. There's very few rules.
Okay. That's good to know. I'll give it to you in two parts. When I was growing up, my dad was a huge national parks guy. So we always used to travel around every summer. We took 2 weeks, went to a different destination or multiple destinations every summer. The old Lampoon's Vacation kind of scene where you pack up the car and go someplace for a couple of weeks.
Nice.
And yeah, with that, I've been fortunate enough to have gone to about 45 states, I think, so far in my days. So the five I have not been to are Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Hawaii, and Alaska.
Oh, you're missing some of the best ones.
I know. I want to get over to the Seattle area, Portland area here. That's probably my next vacation trip, whenever that can take place here. But yeah, I want to get over to the Northwest, and of course Alaska, Hawaii will be someday, hopefully. But that's kind of my domestic dream destination, if you will.
Okay.
And then internationally, I've had the fortune to go to Europe back when I was in high school, and visited England, France, and Italy and Switzerland. So got to see a good chunk of Europe. So having been there, I think my next spot internationally would have to be Australia. I want to head over that way and check that place out.
Australia. Australia is a popular answer. Tell me a little bit about the allure of Australia for you.
Well, I'm kind of a animal lover. So just seeing the wildlife over there, I've heard great things about Sydney and Melbourne as well. But just seeing the terrain. And if I ever get to take my kids along, they're big reptile fans, so getting to see some snakes and all that kind of stuff. So it's just always been, for some reason, just an allure. I was a big Steve Irwin fan growing up too, the crocodile hunter. So
oh yeah,
that might have added to the allure.
Well, I wouldn't dare do half the things that he did. I'd prefer watching it on TV. So, especially in Australia, because isn't that where the most poisonous snakes in the world are?
I think most poisonous everything, it seems like to me.
Yeah. Yep, that sounds like a great National Geographic episode for me.
Yeah. There's probably time for that on Netflix or something, right? You have time to watch some of that stuff.
Totally. Okay. All right. I like it. Tell me, how about of all the places you've ever been, what's your favorite?
Well, again, I guess maybe breaking it down, having been to Europe, that was obviously a great experience. I think I was about 17 at the time. So being an idiot kid, I didn't really appreciate it as much as I should have or could have at the time. I wish I could go back now and really take in some of that history and architecture and a lot of the great stuff that Europe has to offer. But coming back domestically, again, having taken those trips around the country, if I had to pick one place, you know, as I get older, I really appreciate the kind of outdoor mountain scene. You know, growing up, you always did the beach stuff. You want to go to the beach and do the tropical stuff. But as I get older, you know, the mountains and the woods and that kind of stuff kind of interests me more now. So with that said, a trip up to Glacier National Park in Montana when I was in high school was pretty amazing. Just the geography and the sights and the nature and everything that had to, everything that went into that was amazing. And I'd go back there in a heartbeat if I could.
Yeah, I've heard amazing things about Glacier National Park up there in Montana, and I've never actually had the chance to go, but it's definitely on my bucket list. It seems like a great place.
And I'll add this too, not that I'm kissing up to the host here, but I've technically been in Utah at the Four Corners, but I haven't really seen much of Utah. So I'd like to get over there as well and go to Bryce Canyon and some of those other nice attractions.
Yeah, I would say the Four Corners is a very small representation of what you could expect in Utah.
Yeah, so I hesitate in counting Utah, but I guess I've stepped foot in the state, so I guess I can count it.
Yeah, well, we got to get you out here for a better trip. Let me know. We'll hook you up with the whole itinerary to have you really experience the state.
That sounds like a deal.
Awesome. Okay, well, that's good information. You're a well-traveled man, and it's fun to hear where you've been and also where you want to go. How about just give me a little bit about your background? You know, who is Matt Hawkins?
Sure. Well, I've I guess getting personal here. I've married with two boys that are 6 and 3 and a half.
Hence the love for snakes.
Yeah, the snakes and Pokemon and all kinds of crazy stuff we're dealing with, but. They're great kids and they're active and keeps me going, keeps us busy. So love every part of that. As far as me personally, I've always been a sports guy. You know, played 3 sports growing up in high school. Ended up playing college baseball and knew I wanted to Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois, Division III school.
Great.
Yeah, pitched there for 4 years. And knew I always wanted to work in sports. And I think I'm pretty much like every other guest you've had that didn't plan on working in tourism, but here we are.
Yep.
But my path through to tourism came through the sports side of things in getting my degree at Augustana College in business administration with a concentration in marketing. And at the time, interestingly enough, I was planning on minoring in what they called sport and fitness management.
Okay.
But of course, come my sophomore year, they dropped that entire program from the school. So,
oh, no.
I knew I probably should have, you know, I wanted that sports degree. So what turned out to be the best decision I could have made at the time, and looking back, a great, even greater decision was going to get my master's straight after my undergrad. And came back close to home to Illinois State University to get my master's in sports management. And at the time was fortunate enough to get a graduate assistantship in year one in the athletics ticket office and then year two in the athletics marketing department. And just the experience gained through those two positions and, you know, in addition to the actual coursework was invaluable. And making some of the connections through that position, turns out my boss then knew my boss now, and one thing led to another, and here we are. Been working in tourism, sports travel for about 15 years now. So that's kind of the brief 2 minutes into how I got into this role, and a little bit about my background. So,
yeah, how well do you know Nick Povilaitis over at Rockford, Illinois?
Know Nick pretty well. He's a great guy. We see each other probably, I don't know, handful of times a year at shows, and we have our own little group here in Illinois called Sports Illinois. It's a niche committee of the Illinois Council of Convention and Visitors Bureaus. So we see each other at state meetings and at different trade shows around the country quite a bit. So yeah, Nick's a great guy. I know he was on the show a few weeks ago.
Yep. He was a past guest and really did a great job, and I've actually had a good time seeing some of the leadership he's been providing as different destinations have figured out how to navigate this coronavirus crisis. I think he's done a great job of providing leadership there.
Yeah, Rockford is usually in the forefront of some great ideas. I know they just hosted a virtual FAM tour last week as well. So I think that went over pretty well from all accounts.
Absolutely. Okay. All right. Well, let's back up a little bit. You talked about your current role. You've been in the tourism industry now for 15 years. Tell me what your current role is and the responsibilities that come along with that.
Sure. The bulk of my role is in the sports marketing area. My title, as you mentioned, is Director of Sports and Market Development. So along with that, and this is as of probably this past November, so about 6 months, I've taken on some of the responsibilities in and around marketing the destination, mainly including working with a local ad agency to do some of our digital marketing and social media advertising. But the far majority of my day-to-day work is in and around sports management, sports marketing. Of course, calling out to rights holders and event planners to convince them to hold their events here in Bloomington Normal. And along with that, which I know we'll get into here more shortly, is overseeing our sports commission and everything that goes into that, including its own separate board of directors, its own membership base, budgets, and our own events that we own and operate. So between the selling of Bloomington Normal to event planners and coordinating our own stuff internally, that's really the bulk of my position, I guess, in a nutshell.
Yeah, I think that was one of the most attractive things for me about having you on the show is that you guys own and operate four major events within your destination. I think this is a pretty innovative thing for destinations because, you know, you have all this infrastructure built and you have times in the season that are just packed with outside events. And then you have times where, man, how do you fill the hotels and how do you fill the, you know, the sports complex if you have one or whatever it is, depending on the destination. And the idea of creating and owning your own event to me is really innovative and a great way to make sure that on any given weekend or any given time of the year, you can fill the infrastructure that's available by creating those events. So tell me a little bit about what led to the creation of those events and then tell me about those events. I'd love to hear about
it. Sure. Yeah, I think you said the word innovative and I think those ideas probably were innovative. Our oldest event that we own and operate is 19 years old. So I think back then it certainly was an innovative idea. That was before my time in this role in this industry. But I think back then there were very few destinations that were creating their own events and owning and operating themselves. And I think that's become much more common today. However, you know, the amount of events that you own and operate, I think varies across the board. But as you mentioned, we have four of them. Three of them are let's see, one's 19 years old, one's 17 years, and one's about 11 or 12 years old. And really, you mentioned part of it as far as why they've created it is to fill maybe empty weekends or more so for us, it was utilizing, you know, some of our strengths in terms of our facilities and expertise locally. Our oldest event is the State Farm Youth Classic Golf Tournament, which is, as I said, going on 20 years old. We have a committee of about 20, 25 people that help me oversee it and plan it. And the reason that got started was really, you know, when you own and operate an event, you don't have to worry about, you know, selling to someone. It's your event. You don't have to worry about that event moving and going off to some other destination. You have complete control over it. You know it's going to be in your destination. You can, you know, plan for it accordingly, put your own touches on the event and try to make it into what is most beneficial for your community. And of course, you know, a lot of times for us and for many other destinations, it's, you know, bringing those visitors into the area to, you know, stay overnight in hotels and eat at our restaurants and that kind of stuff, which it does play into that. We also want to, you know, offer a first-class opportunity and kind of give back, if you will, to the kids and offer them an outstanding first-class opportunity to play in a world-class event. And when I say world-class, I don't mean to brag, but we've had golfers from across the world come and play over the years. I think we've had representation from 29 states and 14 different countries over the years.
Wow.
Coming and play. And yeah, it's really cool when you see kids come in. I think last year we had maybe a handful of kids from South Africa and I think a couple kids from China here playing. Like I said before, it's really the reason we started is to offer a great opportunity for kids to play as well as, you know, bring folks into our area and spend a little bit of time here in Bloomington Normal.
Great. Well, I love the sound of that golf event. What about some of the other events? You got four total, right? There's three more?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got sucked into the golf topic there. But
well, you know what? I'm like you, Matt. You start getting me talking about golf, I'm going to forget about everything else.
Yeah, I'm getting the itch to play here. Being stuck at home is hurting me. But anyway, yeah. We have three other events. I guess I'll go in order of age of the event. We had the Youth Classic Golf Tournament, which I said was about 20 years old. The next one is called the Midwest Nationals Wrestling Tournament. And it's going, I think, about 17 years, where we have about the last several years, we've had about 1,000 to 1,100 kids come in for a day to our local Division III school. It has an outstanding recreation facility. We put out about 22 mats, wrestling mats.
Wow, in that that's facility, a big tournament.
And yeah, run about 1,000 kids through in a day, which I'm not a big wrestling person. I don't know much about the sport, honestly. So we actually have somebody locally that runs that event for us. We kind of handle the business side of things, if you will. But again, it really stemmed out of filling a need on a calendar for that venue. We had a local person who is really nationally known for his knowledge and expertise in wrestling. He's a longtime wrestling coach, but now he's in the National Wrestling Hall of Fame. So he had a lot of connections for bringing in, you know, celebrity guest speakers or celebrity commissions. And a lot that goes into that one as well is just knowing people that have the expertise to come in and run your, you know, your mat tables and your head table, doing all the scoring and all that kind of stuff. So having those connections and utilizing the network that he had was huge. So that's our second event. Third event is, it's called the State Farm Student Athlete Recognition Banquet. And it's about 11, 12 years old now. And that is not a tournament, obviously. And it really doesn't bring any visitor spending to the area. But it's an event that recognizes high school athletes, coaches, teams. We recognize Special Olympics athletes and a few other awards for those folks. Accomplishments on and off the field of play and in the classroom.
And is that a statewide event, like you're inviting from all parts of Illinois, or is that expanded farther than just Illinois?
Oh, actually, no, it's just more of a local thing. We just do all the high schools that are located within our county.
Very cool.
So it's about, I think I want to say there's about 15 high schools in our county. Those schools, we ask the athletic directors from each school to submit nominations for the various different award categories, and we have 11 different awards.
Okay.
So that, and that event really, again, it's not for bringing in visitor spending. It's more of a kind of a PR tool for us, if you will, and a little bit of a fundraiser where we, again, kind of get to give back, put out some messaging on behalf of the Sports Commission and the CVB and kind of get our name out there a little bit.
Great stakeholder engagement. Right. Like great absolutely. Way to build your brand in your local community. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And then the fourth event is kind of our new baby, if you will. This past January was our second time in hosting this event. It's called the 66 Games Esports Tournament presented by State Farm. And just from year one to year two, it's really grown into quite the beast. Year one, and I guess I'll keep this brief, and you can ask me to expand, I guess, if you'd like. But in year one, we started out with 16 college/open teams in a division, and then 8 high school teams in a division playing League of Legends. And that's really what it was in year one, was just strictly a League of Legends tournament for those two divisions. We brought them into our local arena downtown. And a big component to this event is the fact that we've partnered with one of our local school districts in basically borrowing about 160 computers for the weekend.
Okay.
And without that, obviously we wouldn't be able to do it. You know, even renting, if not even, you know, buying 160 computers is kind of out of the question for our budget. So being able just to borrow those, for a few days from them is huge. And without that, it wouldn't have happened. But, from year one to year two, we were able to expand, not only just the tournament itself, we've gone from 24 teams up to, I think it was 32 teams in year two total. And in addition to the tournament, we expanded into having a video game convention where we had about 50 vendor booths selling anything from vintage games to video game artwork. You know, I think there was one table selling like Pokemon memorabilia and gift items and things like that. So 50 vendors selling various kind of video game related items. And then the third component was a esports clinic where we had actually experts on a national level come in and speak on various topics throughout the day. So we were pretty excited about it. I know esports is really growing by leaps and bounds here. I know a lot of people are trying to figure out or have already started their own event or tournament, but we're pretty proud of what we've got started here. And I think it's shown on a national level, having gotten teams come in from, of course, a lot of Illinois teams, but a lot of the Midwest states. And even we had a team from Arizona State University's team came up this past January to play. So
awesome. Yeah. Esports was something that I really wanted to ask you about, because I think there's still this like old school mentality that esports is just a fad, or it's something that, you know, isn't going to continue to grow. What would you say to people that are a little bit skeptical about esports as a plausible event?
Yes. I would probably just tell them to go Google search how much money is being spent in esports in the industry. And I think that right there, I'll tell you that it's not going to go away anytime soon. There's too many people making a lot of money from esports for it to go away. And the fact now that there's colleges and universities that are offering, you know, full ride scholarships for esports players to come play on their team and compete on a national level. You know, those are just two reasons out of many that, you know, it's not going away anytime soon. If you look at the Asian market or even in Europe, you know, esports is selling out 60,000 seat arenas in Asia. Uh-huh. You know, people watching League of Legends or other games take place. So yeah, it's only going to get bigger here in the States, I think. And we're just trying to capture our little piece of that pie here locally.
So tell me then, you know, with visitors that come for this esports event, what does their spending look like? What kind of volume are you getting just for other destinations considering this type of event? Yes, there's a lot of money in the sport, but what are you actually seeing from a destination standpoint?
Well, we knew it was going to take, you know, somewhat of an incubation period, if you want to use that term. You know, we've started off fairly small in terms of number of teams in that first year. We had, as I said, 24 teams. And really, that was all there is to it. There's a lot of planning that goes into it, a lot of logistics in the computers and setting up your own network inside the building and running all the technical side of things. From a destination standpoint, in year one, it was fairly small compared to a lot of the other events that we operate. But we're trying to keep a big picture mindset and kind of looking at the long game here, knowing that esports is going to continue to grow. You know, as long as we keep making new contacts and kind of incrementally expanding what we can do locally in terms of that event, I think slowly but surely you might see folks, I guess I'll back up. The folks that came to our tournament in year one and kind of in this past year too, really the teams themselves came and played. There wasn't a whole lot of people that came with them,
okay,
you know, to watch, if you will, or to just take it in. There were quite a few people that came in for the convention piece, but in terms of the tournament itself, just spectators coming in to watch the game action, we don't have a lot of that right now.
Okay.
So that's something to keep in mind. You know, you hear all these stories of other arenas, you know, overseas selling out. So I think some of us on the committee had some grand visions of, you know, selling out our arena, which, you know, maybe one day might happen. We're a 6,000-7,000 seat arena here in town. But we're not even close to that now. So,
but I love that you're willing to share that with us, because, you know, it sets expectations correctly for our listeners that may be considering an event like this, that, hey, you know, this is something that it's growing, it's going to build year over year, and you're not going to sell out your entire arena in year one, but it's something that you got to build a foundation for and kind of continue to be consistent. So I even though it didn't perform necessarily the way, you know, some of your board members or whatever expected, I think that's great information for our listeners.
Yeah. And the board, I think, is pretty understanding about that incubation period. And I think we've done a pretty good job of informing them about, you know, what the long game could be on this type of event. Not to mention our state high school association is getting ready to create a state series for esports at the high school level. So, that's another reason that, you know, you see it not going away anytime soon. But having established our event, we think we might have a pretty good chance of possibly locking down the high school association event as well. So it kind of plays into not only the event itself, but, you know, might open up opportunities to bring even more esports events into your community in the future. But going back to your point about, you know, having realistic expectations, it's, you know, we decided that our local arena was the best venue for us. And that might not be the same for everybody. It might be best in, you know, a hotel ballroom or some type of convention center space. But for us, again, not to bore you with all the variables and the factors, we thought that the arena would be the best fit for us. One of the big factors with that is just having the internet capability to pull. If you're going to have that many computers, you know, having the bandwidth to handle that, and a lot of the technical stuff that I'm happy to talk to folks about if they had questions. But there's various factors that go into the ideal venue, and just keeping a realistic expectation that, yeah, we have 7,000 seats to fill, but it might be, you know, 10 years before half of those are even sold for an event like this. So
yeah,
we're trying to figure out other ways, like, you know, the convention piece was added in to try to get more people in the door that just have an interest in gaming itself, not necessarily wanting to come watch the League of Legends tournament. So just, it's kind of trying to be creative in terms of just getting people to come to your destination for different reasons, I suppose.
Totally makes sense. And I appreciate you being a little vulnerable and sharing some of that with us. I think I want to take a step back and just talk about, you know, owning and operating these events on your own, as somebody's getting started or evaluating, hey, do we want to try to create an event from scratch in our destination? Any kind of do's and don'ts that you can throw out there to make sure that you know, we're not making the same mistakes twice in multiple destinations?
Yeah, and I think I kind of touched on it earlier. You know, I think it should be an event that fits, you know, obviously fits your destination. If you don't have, you know, a baseball complex, don't try to create a big baseball tournament. And that, I think, is obviously some of that's common sense. But for us, you know, we got a pretty good set of golf courses. Our golf tournament actually runs on 6 different courses.
Oh.
So making sure that we had the appropriate facilities with that. And for us, in both cases with the golf tournament and with the esports event, you know, I technically oversee both of those and do quite a bit of the work. But if not for, you know, a committee of about 20 people on each one, you know, a lot of this stuff wouldn't be happening. So don't be afraid to ask for help. Get out in your community, make contacts, and you know, you're obviously selling your community to event planners across the country, but you also kind of need to sell yourself locally to, you know, prospective stakeholders and event partners as well to bring them on board. You know, I there was a few people that are on our committee now that I didn't know, but, you know, through local contacts and doing some networking and, you know, this person knows this person, all of a sudden we have a pretty strong committee of 20 people that each have their own kind of specific strengths to bring to the table. So just not being afraid to ask for help and surrounding yourself with the so-called experts in their areas was a huge part of us, especially on the esports side of things.
Great advice. Okay. I want to pivot a little bit now to, you know, you guys, I'm not going to call it an unfair advantage, but you guys have a really unique thing in your destination. And that's that you've got State Farm's corporate headquarters within your destination. Tell me about the benefits of having a major corporation like that within your destination.
Yeah, I mean, they've been a great partner of ours over the years. And I think, not to speak for them, but I think, you know, they like kind of as their, what's their called? Their motto has been for years, you know, be a good neighbor, basically.
Right.
So I think they've really enjoyed kind of giving back and supporting local events, whether it be, you know, the events that we do at the CVB and Sports Commission, or, you know, they're supportive of a lot of the things that happen in our arena downtown and in other places. So I think just, again, being that good neighbor, and I think part of it too is just helping create and maintain and build a community that's attractive for their potential employees is part of it as well. You know, they certainly have hubs in other markets, but Bloomington Normal is their main headquarter community. And I think they want to do everything they can to keep it as vibrant and as attractive as they can. In tourism and some of our events just kind of add to that piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, having an organization like that to support, and especially with the mantra of be a good neighbor, or, you know, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I think that provides a little bit of leverage even for the community to make sure that State Farm is living up to that that promise. I love that they're sponsoring one of your major events and that you guys are able to work together with them. Are there any drawbacks? And obviously you don't want to, you know, call them out or anything like that, but is there any challenges that come with that as you have to approach some of these events? Or is, you know, maybe it's how they, how many hotel rooms they take up sometimes when during peak season, or, you know, are there any difficulties that come along with having someone like a State Farm in your destination?
You know, I'll say the benefits far outweigh the challenges. Yeah, it's not even close. I would say the one negative, and this isn't really even negative, it's, you know, everybody, myself included, just kind of falls back and says, we're holding an event, we're going to go ask State Farm to sponsor it.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking that they're going to do it, they have the money to do it. Whereas, you know, a lot of times it doesn't make sense for you or them to enter into that partnership. So just kind of them being a typical fallback, or the first ask for everybody that's doing anything in town is kind of the major drawback. And I'm kind of guilty of that sometimes as well. But no, they've been a great partner, and I would have nothing bad to say about them. My State Farm contact actually works in their sponsorship area and sits on our Sports Commission board. And he's been nothing but supportive. And he was actually our Sports Commission board chair for 3 years, a couple of years ago. And, you know, his expertise in that industry and his experience in the sports sponsorship area was very insightful and helpful. And, you know, a lot of the stuff we do couldn't have happened without their support. So we're very lucky to have them.
Yeah. Yeah. Great to have them so involved. Well, Matt, you and I, we talked about, you know, a lot of different things we could talk about here on the show. And, you know, we've talked about a lot today. I always like to boil it down to a takeaway. And I think we're kind of at the time in the show where I'd really like to give our listeners, man, if there's one thing you take away from this show, one thing you want to learn, what is it? What would your one major piece of advice be for anyone listening today?
Well, again, I guess I'll go back to the esports example. I'm not a gamer. I don't know. And I'm still learning a lot about the industry and the gaming world, if you will. But I guess it's cliche in a lot of ways, but it's don't be afraid to take a chance on something. I, you know, as I said, didn't have a clue as to what went into esports tournaments or events of any kind. And it just took a lot of legwork, you know, making contacts, doing the research, identifying, you know, what goes into those types of events. And it's a great feeling coming out of that after having done a couple of successful events, knowing that, you know, you put the work in to create a successful event. And again, no, they're not world beaters in terms of, you know, visitor spending and those kind of things, but it's something that you kind of created from scratch. And it's again, kind of your baby that you've seen grow from from nothing into something we think is pretty significant and will continue to grow. So again, cliche, but if you have an idea that you think you could probably tackle, then just go for it. And then if your board or your director is on board with it, or even if they're not, give them the reasons why you think it'll be successful and why you think you should tackle it and go for it. So again, that's my two cents, I guess.
That's great. And I kind of want to add just a little bit to that two of the major takeaways for me is, one, when you're going to own an event and operate an event on your own, you got to realize you're playing the long game here. You're building for the future, and it's mm-hmm. not an overnight sensation in 99% of the cases. It takes a ton of work and it takes years to get there. So that's one, is you're playing the long game. But two, the takeaway for me is, imagine the stability if you have multiple events every year and don't have to worry about that event eventually going elsewhere because you own it. The long-term stability that can come from owning and operating your own events, in my opinion, has an incredible amount of value. And I think you've kind of given us a little bit of a roadmap of how to do that today.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that. Hopefully I have. And I'll say too that, you know, with that, there is some drawbacks in terms of, you know, owning and operating your own events is great. You have that control, but it also takes a lot of time as well. So the esports event was in mid-January, and for the month or two leading up to that, that's almost all I was doing was, you know, getting ready for that event. So if you're planning and owning and operating your own events, you're not spending the time, you know, selling your community to other event planners that could have their events here. At least not as much as you would normally be in off, you know, season. So just keep that in mind too, is, you know, tackling those big ideas is great, but there's going to be some trade-off there.
Yeah, it's not you plan it 1 week and a week later you're having the event. It's a major time investment. Yeah, great point. Well, Matt, thank you so much for coming on today. I feel like this has been a great episode with a little different twist than what we normally do, especially focused on those events. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us today.
Happy to help. And as I said earlier, if folks out there have any questions about esports or otherwise, I'm happy to help them however I can.
Great. Great. Well, thanks so much for your time, and we'll talk to you soon, Matt.
Great. Thanks, Adam.
Well, everyone, this has been another wonderful episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's show, please make sure you go leave a rating or a review on the podcast. We want to make sure that we continue to climb up those charts and become more findable for everybody that's looking. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.